Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
You want low brow, I know what you want. The average Eddie said, what did he just say to her? I want low and brow? No, I drink Bud Light. Okay, whatever. You can't go high brow in talk radio. You lose your audience. That's a given. It doesn't mean that people are stupid. But the fact of the matter is, there are demographics in all media. For example, if you look at Bill Maher, these are people in mental hospitals or prisons. They're trans-brained. Anyone would listen to that show and not understand it's all canned laughter. What would you expect? What would you expect an audience to be? Or Charlie Rose, for example. Mr. Highbrow, Charlie Rose. Howard Stern with a normal male appendage. Howard Stern without sunglasses. Charlie Rose. So Glenn Beck, the failed talk show host, whose empire has collapsed, the man who rubbed his face in cornflakes, goes on the highbrow Charlie Rose show and says that Donald Trump is not qualified to be president. Glenn Beck is not qualified for a mental institution. Welcome to the show. By the way, I have some very good news for myself today and some terrible news for my competitors and those who hate me. The ratings have come out for the last month, which is the month of September, and I am allowed to give you the generals. On my flagship station in New York City on WABC, this show is a raging number one of all the shows on WABC, and I beat all my competitors in talk radio. It's that simple. The numbers don't lie. Don't matter what they say, the numbers are real. 12 plus, Savage Nation number one. 25-54, Savage Nation number one. And that's all you have to know, is that the people are listening to the show and they like it. So whatever I do, and I'll do it as well as I can for as long as I can. That's it. Now may I go home? Good night. I'm bored of the election. No more. I can't take it. Now, the other day, we saw that the Russian naval battle group was moving through the English Channel, and Doofus, the schmuck who runs the country, the criminal schmuck who runs the nation, who had a rap group in the White House, further diminishing and debasing the United States of America, gets away with anything. Trump sneezes and his droplets hit a woman on the back of a plane 20 years ago, and Charlie Rose can't stop talking about it. The droplets hit a woman on the back of a plane, and people are bailing out of going to his hotels. All of the refined people in New York, Chicago, San Francisco, all of the refined, affluent people who are just stunned that he is such an evil man, just pure evil. Oh, how dare he grope a woman? Now, this is an astounding story. Trump brand loses luster with affluent, according to the Associated Pukes at AP. And they quote an event planner named Beth Bernstein. I can just imagine how pure Beth Bernstein must be in a private life. But nevertheless, Beth Bernstein decided that after his hot mic boasts about groping women came to light, old Beth Bernstein, as pure as the driven snow, I am sure, removed wedding photos that she had thrown at a Trump hotel in Chicago from her website. She wrote to hotel staff to remove her from the list of preferred vendors and posted a call to arms on her blog. She says, I simply cannot bring myself to walk in that door there any longer, wrote the owner of an event company. Now, she's not alone. We learned that rates for rooms at Trump's new D.C. hotel are being slashed as travelers weigh their options. And smartphone data suggests fewer people are visiting his properties compared to rival venues nearby. So they're saying that the Trump brand is really in trouble right now. But it's not amongst the average person. It's amongst the, quote, well-heeled. Now, I don't know that anyone who's not well-heeled has low heels or ripped heels. I think all of us have good heels these days. The age of the idea of well-heeled versus bad heels is way, way over. I mean, who goes to a shoe store to have a shoe repaired these days? But put aside the Manalo issue. The issue is his brand being tarnished? Some say yes. Now, they're quoting people like this one or another one, a marketing professor at NYU. I mean, a marketing professor at NYU is about as valid as, I can't even make an analogy. It's in a class by itself. A marketing professor at NYU stands alone amongst itself because anyone who's a clever man in marketing wouldn't be teaching at NYU. he wouldn't be teaching marketing. There used to be a saying in the teaching profession, those who can do, those who can't teach. So we won't really talk about the marketing professor at NYU who says right now his brands cater to the affluent who are disproportionately turned off by his activities. Now, that's a laugh unto itself because the alleged activities are commonplace amongst the affluent. Don't they all cheat on their wives? Don't all the wives sleep with their girlfriends? I mean, they have no values. They have no morals. They don't go to church. So why would they be turned off so much? I'll let you figure out the projection. Now, on the other hand, the people who are not affluent, I guess the others down there, are not turned off by the mogul. And his brand is not being tarnished. But apparently, the poorer people don't stay in Trump hotels anyway. That's all. Is that enough of that? Can I ask you a question on it? Have you stopped or started buying the Trump brand? Stop it. I'm not interested. And I'm not interesting because I'm not interested. Here's what I intended to do today, and I can't do it, so I'm a little upset. Russia's naval battle group moves to Syria, demonstrating power projection capability. So while the doofus in the White House was having a rap party with the lowest elements of the planet and doing nothing about anything in the world except laughing at everybody and mocking his domestic enemies, going on stupid shows like Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel is like Yonah Schimmel. In fact, Yonah Schimmel on the Lower East Side had better knishes than Jimmy has brains. So you have a president who's so low that he goes on Yonah Kimmel's show and talks about tweeting while Russia moves a naval fleet to their base in Syria. The ship can carry more than 50 aircraft, 15 Su-33 all-weather air superiority jets, MiG-29s, multiple fighters, 10 Ka-27s, Ka-31 helicopters. The entire northern fleet, joined by the Baltic fleet ships, is on the way to the Mediterranean. It is amazing. 7 other ships as part of the battle group, including the nuclear battle cruiser. This is very serious business. And they're joining 10 other Russian vessels already off Syria. And the fact of the matter is, Obama knows this. And he has threatened to do something about it. Instead, the doofus had a party with a bunch of low-life rap stars in the White House and then went on Yonah Schimmel's television show the other night. So Trump sneezes. It's covered by 15,000 news outlets that second. Obama waffles, can't do anything right, and he's held up as a role model for the world. That's the twisted universe in which Donald Trump is running. So because we saw the sabers being rattled between Russia and the U.S., because we saw Hillary Clinton calling him Hitler and rattling her sabers against Putin, making him the worst man on the planet, even though that's not the truth whatsoever, we saw nothing in the media to show us that it was Hillary who raised the stakes in this Cold War all over again. Never forget that we had a Cold War with Russia that ran for 50 years, and it more or less ended until the genius who was currently invading the White House entered the White House. He restarted the Cold War in order to make certain that the world doesn't look at his own foibles and failings. And now we are on the brink of perhaps a nuclear war, which leads me to the topic of the day. I was going to read from a stupendous book today, but I can't because it's not yet posted. I have to wait another day or another few hours. It is a book called The Survivor, which I wrote in the 1980s and recently rediscovered, and is going to be published up on Kindle for you. I wrote it in 1982 let me just read you the description. An unfinished early novel and outline by one of America's most listened-to radio talk show hosts. Written between 1982 and 1988, The Survivor is an anti-nuclear story from this conservative writer and talker. It tells the tale of how two families try to survive after a limited nuclear exchange between the United States and Russia. Filled with the details Savage is known for, the story will take the reader on both a sea passage to Mexico and the South Pacific and a mind trip to a world we all fear and for which few people are prepared. Well, I can't send you to the book right now because it's not yet been posted on Kindle. We've had a delay. But when it's up, I will do what I intended to do today, which is read passages from it and invite you to download it yourself for a few dollars. Again, my friends, thanks for listening. Good night and good luck. No, now we'll go on to the real stories of the day. Here are the real stories of the day, and they're so tragic I didn't want to read them. I've just been delaying reading them because the news is worse by the second. In New York City, a principal at a Lower Manhattan High School for Special Youths in the Manhattan Early College School for Advertising, which is inside the Murray Bergtraum High School, a principal spotted 18-year-old Louis Penzo with his headphones blasting in the hallway. So the principal, Matthew Tossman, asked the youth, Penzo, to turn down the music. And Penzo, the youth, refused. So then the principal, Mr. Tossman, who's a real principal, tried to remove the headphones from the 18-year-old student. Hey, I'm a student. I'm an 18-year-old student. Of course, in my day, the 18-year-old student would have been in prison by now. But because of the idiot liberal judges and educators in New York City, the moron is still in high school. The moron turns around and cold cocks the principal. And then when the principal is on the ground, he beats him up on the floor, beating him several times in the face, causing swelling and lacerations around both of the principal's eyes. The principal, Mr. Tossman, was taken to Lower Manhattan Hospital for treatment. Now, the rest of the story should say the youth was kept in jail and charged for his attempted murder, but no. I'm waiting for Mr. de Blasio to hire him as head of human resources and say he's an oppressed minority who was picked on by an evil non-minority principal. But that story hasn't come out yet. Instead, we see that Penzo was arrested and charged with second-degree assault. And he is currently awaiting arraignment at Manhattan Criminal Court as of last night. Now, of course, they'll shop it to some liberal psycho judge on marijuana who will say he's an oppressed youth and needs another chance and let the kid back to beat someone else up. Oh, by the way, before we go from this story, Mr. Penzo, the youth, lives in Bedford-Stuyvesant, a once great neighborhood which has turned into a cesspool. Penzo was involved in a separate Donnybrook now, and they're using an Irish term. I would change it from Donnybrook to something else, but it's a family show. Mr. Penzo, who lives in Bedford-Stuyvesant, was involved in another brutal brawl just last month when Penzo crashed his car into another vehicle in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and then repeatedly punched the other driver. But he wasn't arrested. The reason he wasn't arrested is because the police in New York are under strict orders to not ever arrest a minority unless that minority should assault a member of Mayor de Blasio's city council. And then he will be taken in as a possible employee. Anyway, he was charged with assault and harassment for that incident, but released immediately to go on to what he does best. Here's another little story for you. Sweden bans Christmas lights under the guise of security. But it's that there ain't no Sweden anymore. Kiss Sweden goodbye. Because of the liberal fools who run Sweden, they're not lighting up Christmas lights because it may offend who? Muslims. Muslims. It used to be when in Rome, do as the Romans do. But it's now when in Rome, do as the Muslims do. And if you think it can't happen here, just remember who's running the country. His name is Barry Hussein Obama. Make no mistake about it. Soon the Christmas lights will go out in America. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Another little story for you to show the beauties and wonders of multiculturalism that's been sold to you by the vermin in the liberal movement, the upscale, affluent vermin who hate Trump. Here's the headline. Migrant's rape sentence overturned if the court can't prove victim said no. So you're on the face of it, you say, migrant. Well, that's, of course, a cover word now, migrant for Muslim. You understand that. A migrant who was jailed after raping a young boy at a swimming pool has had his sentence overturned as the court couldn't prove that he knew the child said no. The incident occurred when the vile attacker, identified as 20-year-old Amir A., visited Theresienbad Pool in Vienna, Austria. You see, he is allowed in the pool, the Muslim, because it was part of the integration process of Angela Merkel, the war criminal. So the Iraqi Muslim, who worked as a taxi driver after coming into Austria via the Balkans, was also given a 15-year-old helper and translator by Angela Merkel, the war criminal. So the Muslim from Iraq, who was led into Germany because the men have been deballed by the radical feminists who have destroyed Germany, brutally sexually assaulted the 10-year-old boy in the pool's changing room. In other words, he raped a 10-year-old boy. And then he went for a little swim. When he was caught, he said it was a sexual emergency because he hadn't had sex for 4 months. Now, right there, you see, that's the failure of the German government for not providing him with little boys upon arrival. In addition to sandwiches, warm clothing, an iPhone, even housing the Germans don't have. They should be given little boys because that's part of their culture. He called it a sexual emergency. So after the little boy who had been raped alerted a lifeguard, police arrested the Iraqi Muslim at the scene, and the boy was taken to hospital with severe internal injuries. Do you know what that means? Do I have to spell it out for you what this animal did to this child? Up to me. I'm the judge. I would castrate him and hang him from a telephone pole. But no, that's not what the judge did. Are you ready for the rest of the story? The attacker was later found guilty of serious sexual assault and rape of a minor. And he received a sentence of 6 years in jail. But wait, here's the rest of the story. The German Supreme Court lifted the verdict after accepting the defense vermin lawyer's claim that the lower court had not done enough to ascertain whether or not the rapist had realized the schoolboy was saying no. I'm not making this up. This is what has happened to once great Germany as a result of the infection, the mental infection of liberalism. Supreme Court President Thomas Philipp said that while the verdict was watertight with regard to the serious sexual abuse of a child, the written verdict on the second indictment, rape, cannot be sufficiently proved. And so the 20-year-old Muslim rapist of the little boy is now free to go. And the next legal step will take place in 2017. This is a cautionary tale for all of you upper-scale liberals who think that being nice to everyone is the way to make them nice to you. As they say from where I come from, it's nice to be a liberal until you're mugged by someone, and then you might change your mind. But it's actually said in more vernacular terms, which I cannot repeat on this family show.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Now, I don't know whether to say this is good news or not, but Jane Fonda's ex-husband, the traitor Tom Hayden, finally died. Tom Hayden, 1960s anti-war activist, dies at 76. Now, of course, the AP glorified him as a great man, but he wasn't a great man. He was a piece of garbage, in my opinion. He was a member of the SDS, which is a communist organization. In 1960, while a student at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, one of the worst places on the planet, he was involved in the formation of Students for a Democratic Society, and it's the opposite of a democratic society. They were hardcore Marxists even then. As they said, they were for desegregating the South. And he wrote the Port Huron Statement, very famous amongst old-line, dirty hippies all over America. But the SDS was equivalent of the STD of today. The SDS was the political equivalent of STDs. But nevertheless, the student movement was glorified by the vermin in the American media, and he has finally gone on to his reward. And let us hope that there is actually a hell and a heaven. And I'll let you know in a few minutes where I think he should go. Now, let's go back to this horrible story of what liberalism has done to Germany. When you say Germany, what would you normally think of? Virile men. Large, good-looking women. But no, that's not the Germany of today. It's been taken over by militant, anti-male feminists in the form of Angela Merkel, the war criminal. The courts have been taken over by the perverts of Germany, who now say that although a 20-year-old Muslim from Iraq raped a 10-year-old boy, leaving him with severe internal injuries, you know what that means? Do I have to spell it out for you? The child was destroyed. So the Muslim attacker who they let into their country out of the stupidity, the idiocy, the moronic idea that they owe the world something because they built a great nation, was found guilty of sexual assault and rape of a minor. And he received the already too low sentence of 6 years in jail. He should have been castrated. But then the German Supreme Court, which was peppered with the low-life liberals of the type that Obama and Hillary would like to put on our Supreme Court, just think of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Just think of Beyer and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but think of all the Supreme Court justices on that side of the scale, the psycho-liberal types, the university types, the anti-male types, the anti-American types, the anti-church types, the anti-mother-father types, the anti-church types. You get it? So Germany has a Supreme Court, and they lift the verdict because the defense lawyer says that the lower court had not done enough to determine whether or not the Muslim rapist from Iraq had realized the 10-year-old boy he was raping was saying no. See, he didn't understand. It was a language barrier. In his language, he probably thought he was saying, oh, that's great. He wasn't saying no. I'm sure the defense attorney, who was the devil himself, thought that the verdict was correct. To throw the verdict out. And so Supreme Court President Thomas Philipp in Germany said that while the verdict was watertight with regard to the serious abuse of a juvenile, not the rape of a juvenile and ruination of the life, the written verdict on the second indictment, rape, cannot be sufficiently proved. And that's what happens when liberals take over a nation. You know, if I had to give you one example of what's at stake in the coming election, it couldn't be a better story than the one I just read you. Because if this psychopath, Hillary Clinton, who is unfit to be anything except a prisoner, if this psychopath wins, she will destroy this country not for 4 years, not for 8 years, but forever. She will destroy the country from within through the courts. If you think I am mistaken, just study your history, and you will see that liberalism is, in fact, a true mental disorder. Now, the story is so horrible about raping a 10-year-old boy and getting away with it because the courts have liberal justices in Germany. The same here, by the way. New York is just like that. It's not much different. One case after the other. I remember a case years ago in New York. Many years ago, as a matter of fact, that was shocking, but shocking to a person with a sane brain. A group of Dominicans in the Bronx were seen at 2 in the morning with a trunk that seemed that was a little low. The trunk of the car was hanging, you know, lower than it should have been. So there was a taillight out. So the cops who were on duty had the nerve to arrest them. They said, you have a broken taillight. We're going to inspect your trunk. They found 40 kilos of cocaine. They were arrested. But then they shopped it to a liberal judge in New York City, in Manhattan. That's not too hard to find. In fact, when you say judge in New York City, what you mean is a psychopath on medication who has a law degree. Someone who was found foaming on himself or herself in the morning and is cleaned up by the roommate and sent into the court with a black robe. There's not enough sanitation in New York to clean up the judges in New York. But nevertheless, the judge hears the case and says that although they found 30 kilos of cocaine in the trunk, he was going to throw the case out because there was not enough evidence of the correct reason for search and seizure. So you ask yourself why crime is out of control in America, which it is despite what Obama and his liars in the media will tell you. There's a crime wave in San Francisco unlike I've ever seen in my lifetime. Tourists being mugged, tourists being beaten, houses being broken into. Every car in the street is broken into in San Francisco in the tourist areas. But it's being swept under the rug by the city fathers, obviously, because they don't want to kill the goose that lays the golden egg. And that's because the courts are so lenient, meaning the courts are so liberal. Remember, lenient and liberal are sisters of one another. I'm a law and order guy. I follow the law. I stop at red lights. I go on green lights. I slow down on yellow lights. I want my society to arrest people who go through red lights. I want them to arrest drug dealers. Not to bring them to the White House for a party. You get the picture? Now, Trump at some point in his campaign said he was the law and order candidate. You remember how that got dropped pretty quickly? Remember that one? For a while he was running with that line, which I gave him. It was a great line. He is the law and order candidate. If he stuck to law and order and just his economic plan for jobs, he'd be way ahead in the polls. But instead, he veered off into his personal vendettas, and that's weakening him. I'll tell you right now, he could still win. We don't know. We know they're going to steal the election wherever they can, the Dems. We know it's rigged. We know that George Soros owns the voting machines in 16 states. In my opinion, George Soros is an international war criminal. War criminals should be hunted down by Interpol and turned over to the nearest federal marshal for remandering to the nearest people's court. But that's just a fantasy I have because I have written novels. How could a man like that who is so vile own the voting machines in 16 states and not be arrested? Answer, because we have a president who was elected because of him. Any other questions? I have the answers. So the news is so terrible that I want to do something nice now because inside of me there's really a nice person waiting to come out. And he does come out once in a while in his writings. About sometime this year, I wrote a book called Teddy and Me, Confessions of a Service Human. Now, I've been doing all politics this year because of the election. It's a beautiful book with the most beautiful photographs of my little poodle. He's got such a soul in his little eyes. Photography is by the greatest pet photographer in the world, Vincent Ramini, who flew out from New York. Many of you bought the book, Teddy and Me, Confessions of a Service Human. It was to show a different side of yours truly. But there's a part of the book that I've never read to you that I can recall. It's on page 59, about a bedtime story that I wrote one day. I'm also a child story writer. I never published any of them. And it's called Kindly Dogs and Kindly Bears. And when you listen to it, you realize it's a great holiday story for children. It's found inside Teddy and Me. And by the way, it's funny to me how the book got laid out. It's on page 59, and this is the most gentle story in the book. Actually, it's the most gentle story I've ever published. And it's of a picture of me in bed with my pajamas on reading a newspaper with Teddy, my loyal Teddy, next to me under my left arm. And he's staring at a loaded shotgun, which is lying across the bed. And it says, locked and loaded, ready for bed. The publisher didn't even want the book, that photo published. Salt and pepper beard, looked like Hemingway. Thank God it didn't end like Hemingway, but it's still early yet. So here's the bedtime story that I read to Ted some rainy nights when the thunder scares him like tonight. It's a short story. It's a sweet story. In the forest, there lived some bears, but they were a lost tribe of little bears, very little bears. Whenever someone passed by, they hid, and so no one had ever seen them. In the village, there were hunting dogs, big hunting dogs that hated bears. They were called poodles. Everyone thought they were cute because they smiled as poodles do. But they were bred to hunt, not to smile. In this village, there was a kindly old man who loved both dogs and bears. He cried every time the hunters came home with a bear. So he decided to help both bears and dogs. First, he found the smallest of the poodles. Then he secretly married the little poodle to another little poodle, and they had seven small baby poodles. Then he went back into the forest and found an abandoned baby bear that was left behind after his mama was taken by the hunters. He took the baby bear home and introduced her to the small baby poodles. They all played together in Mr. Kindly's cottage. Then one day the old man thought, what's going to happen to them when I'm gone? Who will take care of them? Mr. Kindly decided he would keep choosing from the smallest of these little bears and the smallest of these dogs and help them have babies. Years later, when Mr. Kindly was gone and his small cottage sat abandoned in the deep forest, a group of school children on a field trip stumbled upon it. They slowly tiptoed in. As they looked around, they found torn and yellowed scraps of pictures showing the kindly old man surrounded by little dogs and little bears, all cozy together around the warm fire in the hearth. The children's teacher wondered where all those cute furry animals came from and where they went. Deep in the forest, there was a huge, huge tree whose trunk was wider than an elephant. It was more than 200 years old. In this tree was a little door carved near the foot of the trunk. The door led to a cave, which spread out forever and a mile, and only God in heaven could see where this endless cave led. Somewhere beyond this tree, there is a world where tiny bears and tiny poodles sit together, sipping on honeyed leaves no human has ever seen, that give all the nutrition needed for kindly bears and kindly dogs to live forever and a day.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
I'm going to give you an analysis now that's very unique, and it's important that you hear me. This is everything wrong with America and everything wrong with our political system and everything wrong with talk radio. In the first, 45 minutes of my show, I read you, I talked to you about different topics. And then I let out a piece of me that's soft and kind, a Mr. Rogers side of me, if you want to put it that way. And you know what you're calling about? You're calling about the rape of the boy by the Muslim. You're calling about the beating of the teacher by a youth in Manhattan. And what this says to me is, you're angry, you're rationally angry,
rationally pissed off that the liberals have destroyed our society, letting these animals roam in the streets, putting them in our schools instead of reform schools. And all you want to do is hear about how bad things are. If I try, or maybe anyone else does, I can't speak for anyone else's show, I don't listen to them. If I try something else on a different... Remember I started the show by saying, do you want highbrow or lowbrow? I could have said, do you want soft or hard? Do you want anger or love? Do you want kindness or rage? All you want is the rage. That's all you want is the rage. You want rage all the time in talk radio. I've known this for years. I'm not new to the business. Believe me, I'm not new to this subject matter called talk radio. I've been at it since 1994, and I know that rage is something that excites the needle and moves the needle. And frankly, kindness and gentleness doesn't move anything. So I read you the children's story from Teddy and Me for the holidays. It's a perfect story for children. I buried it inside the book, sort of like a hidden gem. I like to create secrets for people, secret discoveries. So I put this children's story inside the book, Teddy and Me, and I figured somebody would respond to it in some way, but no, not one call. All people are calling about is about the rape of the boy by the Muslim in Germany, the judge in Germany, because that got you mad, that it incited your rage, as it should. And you know that if Trump loses, we're going to lose the Supreme Court. You know that Hillary is so psycho that she's got to put psychopaths on the Supreme Court who will look the other way as she continues to pillage the nation and to buffalo the entire population. She needs liberal judges in order to let the animals go wild in the streets to keep us in line. Here's a little story for you if you want some rage. Headline, New York Post. Crazed teens viciously attack college kids for no reason. Now, of course, it's a racial story, but you don't know that until you're halfway, third of the way down. But because of the vicious attacks upon police by this crazy man in the White House and his slew of vicious accomplices, six students were beaten and bloodied over the weekend, along with a cop who was beaten and a police horse. You see, more than 150 teens, now teen, of course, is a code word, teens spread out in groups of 20 or 30 descended upon the once great campus at around 8:30 on Friday night and went beating people up for about 2 hours. Temple University spokesman told a TV station that the mob had been playing a cat and mouse game with cops as they assaulted people for no reason who were walking around the campus. Security officials said that juveniles, again, code word, had coordinated a meetup on Instagram, with most of them gathering near the North Philadelphia University around 8 p.m. The horde of youths seemed to be targeting people at random during attacks, pummeling them, destroying their personal items, robbing them in some instances. In one incident, a female student named Christina Lollette was beaten to a bloody pulp and hospitalized after a group of youths ganged up on her and two others. Her and her two male friends were badly beaten by a group of 30 to 40 black teenagers on their way home from the Temple football game, said her father, Joe Lolletta. He said on his Facebook post. He continued. He said, his words, these sick animals held her down and kicked and stomped on her repeatedly. He seethed. Every part of her body is badly bruised. It makes me cry just thinking about it. That's what the youths did to his beautiful daughter. In a separate incident, the 16-year-old male targeted a mounted police officer, punching the horse twice in the mouth as the cop tried to break up a crowd. Shall I go on about the teens or the youths or the juveniles to tell you that it's all Obama's fault because he has done it with a wink and a nod? Have a nice break.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
They open the show by saying you want highbrow or lowbrow. And I know you want Sid Vicious, not Mr. Rogers. But you look, I tried the Mr. Rogers part of me, and it fell on its face. The Mr. Rogers ran away in shame. Most men, if they do have a soft, compassionate side, keep it to themselves. And that's probably a necessity in this vicious world of ours. Women, on the other hand, are tough enough to show their compassionate side, and they hide their vicious side. And they're called Democrats. But nevertheless, aside from the politics and the political statement, I did read a little piece from Teddy and Me, which will make a great book for Christmas, for children, for adults. And it was about dogs and bears, and I thought it was a touching story. I remember when I wrote it. You know how you know when a story is good, all you out there who want to be a writer? Can I tell you how you know when a story is good? As you are writing it, if you feel emotion running through you, and your hand is moving almost as fast as your mind can visualize words, and maybe even if some feelings come through you that you're not used to, then you're moving yourself, or the words are moving you, and then you know you've got something worthwhile. Otherwise, well, whatever it is, I'm not going to tell you what your work is. If you're writing something and you get tears in your eyes, it's even better. Look at the Irish poets, for God's sakes. Men as tough as Irish, they love poetry. At least they did. I don't know what the current Irish generation loves. I have no idea. I haven't been to Ireland. But even a land as stark as Ireland, with such tragedy imposed upon them, both by the geography and the Great Famine and then the British, they still had time for their artists and their poetry. And the men would knock down a few beers and listen to poetry. I don't know if that works in America anymore. I really don't know what's left in this country anymore. I'll be honest with you. I don't know what the average person thinks. I do know how to move audiences. Don't get me wrong. I've never lost my ability to move a mass audience, and I know what will move you. It's not that I want to stop doing that. I think it's important that you know about Muslim rapists who rape little boys of 10, rip them apart in the sex act, and are then released by the judges in Germany because they didn't know if the boy said no or not in Arabic, even though he was a German boy. And how that will come here if Hillary wins, because it's all about liberal judges and justices. And when I read to you, Sweden bans Christmas lights under the guise of security in order not to offend the invaders known as Muslims, I want to warn you again what will happen here as Western civilization is continuously assaulted by the progressives, the Islamists, and the progs. And then there was the other story. There are so many other stories that I know they moved you. The principal beaten in a New York City high school after telling a teen, an 18-year-old goon, to remove his headphones. The teen beat the principal up, beat him almost to a pulp. Not in my time as a young teacher in New York. An animal like that would have been in a reform school, and if he misbehaved there, he would have been in prison. He would have gone to Wallkill. And then if he didn't behave in Wallkill, he would have gone to a hard prison where the men in the prison would have beaten him up and put him in line. Now they release him in the halls of the schools. And then there was the story in Philadelphia of the teens, the mob of teens racially attacking white people, beating a girl almost to a pulp, attacking a police horse, again swept under the rug. And I know that these stories are important to you because you need to know what you know. And it's not being reported, and you turn to talk radio as an outlet for it. But I had had enough of it at a certain point, so I had to read you the Little Bears and Little Poodles thing. Children's story from Teddy and Me for the holidays, of the great pictures by Vincent Rimini. I haven't talked about the book for a long while because I've been under the pressure of, frankly, telling you about Scorched Earth, Restoring the Country After Obama, by the same publisher. And it's a great book. It's still doing well. It's still in the bookstores. And our ignorance of history and our immediate challenges and our virtues, our shame, our complacency, and our future, our challenges and our scorched earth are all in there. It comes down to one sentence. Life under Trump, death under Clinton. Oh, I know, he's not fit for office. No, she's fit for office. She's fit for an orange jumpsuit. He's fit for office. And that's why I read you the story about the teddy bears and the teddy dogs. You know, this morning I got up. I'm just in a weird mood. You'll have to let me do what I got to do because I can't do anything but what I got to do. I'm not burned out on politics. I'm beyond burned out. I'm not burned out on the election. I'm more than burned out on the election. I'm not burned out on the campaigns. I'm beyond the campaigns. I'm already looking beyond them with a great sigh of relief. It's 2 weeks from today. One of the two is going to be president that night. I have a private party planned in a private location for 20 people. And I planned that so I wasn't alone. Now, look, I could be in an auditorium with thousands, or I could have done it on the internet and charged, you know, people $2 to attend the Michael Savage Election Eve party. I didn't want to do that. I wanted 20 people. I'm catering a dinner, drinks, whatever. And we're going to watch the TV. Whatever happens, happens. Back in 08, when Obama was first foisted upon us, I had rented one of the boats in San Francisco and put on an Election Eve party for about 40 contributors to the Michael Savage legal fund. It was a nice party. And there's a great picture of me that wound up in one of my personal books called Psychological Nudity, I think. I don't know which book it's in. Of me sitting dejected down below on the ship the night Obama won. And I'm sitting dejectedly, and my dog is below me, not looking dejected. He didn't know, but he was below me. And the title of the caption on the picture was simple: The Night We All Lost America, 2008. Well, I hope that this year there's a picture saying it's the night that America was saved. But we don't know what the outcome is going to be. It's razor thin, despite what the liars in the media say, despite the rigging of the election, despite the fact that George Soros owns voting machines in 16 states. Maybe the Republicans, just maybe, could pull it out of the hat. But then our work will really begin. If you think that I think Trump is going to be able to deliver, even if he wanted to, on all of his promises, you'd be quite mistaken. It's going to be my job in particular, since I championed him long before anyone else in the media championed him. Did you hear me? It'll be my job to keep saying to them, you're wrong, get back on track. That's if he wins. And it doesn't matter what I will say at that point, because they won't need me. I know that as well. But I will go on and they will go on. And hopefully if Hillary wins, I will go on and she will go on, but I'm not so sure with her. I'm not so sure with her whether we will still have a vigorous First Amendment. But I want to remind you of something. The First Amendment was written to protect angry speech, vile speech, pissed off speech. You see, you don't need a First Amendment for polite speech. If you're one of these university types, or you've been caponized in a corporate structure where you can't say anything, you don't need a First Amendment. You don't have it anyway. You've been already turned into something else by the controllers inside these structures. So the First Amendment was written, as I say, in order to protect very, very unpopular speech, not to protect polite speech. Hillary Clinton, do you think she respect that? I don't. Now, many of you are calling on all the stories, and a few of you are calling on the bear and dog story. Let's go to WMAL on line 8. Jason, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I'm a father of six, and that dog and bear story brought me to tears. I'm going through some issues right now with my ex-wife, and it just made me think of my kids, and I want to thank you for sharing that.
Well, I won't pry as to what you were going through, but you do agree it's a good story for children, right?
Oh, absolutely, and especially in this really racially charged and hated time, this election season, it's just good to remember your childhood.
And yes, and I'm going to send you a holiday gift, which is a beautiful copy of Teddy and Me, in which the story of the bears and the little bears and the little tribe of little bears is found. Okay, free copy for you. Great gift for the holidays. It ends nicely. Somewhere Beyond This Tree. It's like Somewhere Beyond the Sea, right? Hey, play Somewhere Beyond the Sea by Bobby Darin. Used to be my favorite song. I can still taste the pizza from Queens when I hear that one. Up on Union Turnpike, when it still tasted like pizza. When the mozzarella cheese still had a smell like, well, something foul. Now mozzarella cheese has gone the way of Chardonnay wine. Originally, Chardonnay was a tart wine. And then in the 70s and 80s, they started converting it to a sweet, creamy taste in order to satisfy the taste of people who grew up with soda. And now Chardonnay is almost undrinkable. But nevertheless, somewhere beyond this tree, there is a world where tiny bears and tiny poodles sit together sipping on honey leaves no human has ever seen, that give all the nutrition needed for kindly bears and kindly dogs to live forever and a day. That's something a child would love, right? Children don't want to think about death. Children don't want to think about hunting animals and killing them. Children don't want to see dogs hunting down bears. Children want to live in a fantasy world. It's taken me a long time. It's been a long fall up. Let me tell you that. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
It's a rainy day outside. I mean, out here in the San Francisco area, I love it. The rain's finally coming down. All the people are like, oh, it's raining. Oh, how horrible. It's not like Southern California. What would you move here for? Move to San Francisco. They walk around in undershirts waiting for the sun to come out. I love it. I mean, when you're coming, just go back to Santa Barbara. Get yourself a surfboard with wheels. I love it. The rain is gorgeous. My favorite times in San Francisco are like when the rain is on the streets. And towards dusk, you see the red taillights of cars going down the streets and up the hills and down the hills, and all the tourists have gone home, and all the filth is washed away, the bums are washed off the streets. It's a beautiful time to be in the rain here. I love it. WMAL in Washington. Carol, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Savage. I listen to your show every day. I just wanted to comment on how wonderful the story you just read from your book. I loved it so much. I was driving in traffic coming from my daughter's house, and I just envisioned the tree with the small dogs, poodles, and the small bears, and it was very refreshing. I really needed that. My grandson was diagnosed in May with leukemia.
He's only three.
And I think, you know, it was just very refreshing. And he loves fairy tales. And, you know.
Oh, that's a touching statement you're making. And there's no comment for something such as this terrible, tragic situation that you're going through. Unfortunately, childhood cancers today are a raging epidemic. I can go on and on about it because it's been a passion of mine for a long time. I have tried my best to alert people to the poisons in our foods, our airs, our waters, the chemicals, the sprays, the air fresheners that are hung in the children's rooms. They're poisoning our kids and killing them. You know, way back, I have to keep referring to my writings because I'm fundamentally a writer before I was an orator. And way back in the 80s, I wrote a book called Healing Children Naturally. And my whole book was about the childhood cancer epidemic. And it was a shocking statistic then. But you wouldn't believe how many children are dying of cancer in this country right now. That's even after all these years and all the billions and billions of dollars that have been spent on so-called research, they're still dying of cancer. The statistics haven't changed very much. There's a raging epidemic of childhood cancer in this country. And the only thing I can say to you is I'm sorry for your pain, and I will send you a copy of Teddy and Me so that perhaps you can read your grandson. It's a grandson, right? Not a granddaughter? I guess, yeah, well, I think the lady is gone. I'll send you a copy of the book if she's still on the line. Look, I don't want to get maudlin. That's not the object of today's show. It's just that I'm not going to do the election. If you think I'm going to be one of these stooges or sit here and read polls to you, you're mistaken. What? That's radio to sit here and read a poll? This one's up, that one's down, the Democrats do this, all day long? It's a suicide mission. What, you're not smart enough to read a poll yourself once a week? That's all you... What more do you need? How many times do you have to hear the same garbage? I am sick of this election. I hate this election. I hate the political process. I hate both political parties. They're doing it only to distract us from the crimes that they're committing. They're robbing the Treasury, both parties. They're running an election for over a year to keep us distracted from the crimes and the incompetence. And we put up with it. Throw them all out. Throw all 400 of them out of Congress. Get a garbage man in there, they would do better. Get a hooker from Las Vegas, you'd do better than these senators in there.
an election for a year like this. What was the phrase in ancient Rome? I forget what it was, but it was all about distraction. Constant distraction. Bread and circuses, that's what I was thinking of. Bread and circuses, that's all it is. Shadows on a wall, while the real people who run the country are destroying everything of any value. And we're sitting here worrying about this one, that one, this party, that party. I'm not going to do it. I'm on strike. I'm running a filibuster right now on my own show. I'm not doing it. If I have to read from Joseph Conrad's novel, if I have to read from Mice and Men or from my own books, that's what I'm going to do for another little bit. I have had enough of this mind-numbing, soul-killing election. I can't wait for it to be over. Or would you like me to talk about what Obama has done now? Because I'll do that as well.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Here's another little story for those of you who want to see what Obama has done to this country with his racial hatred and division and divisiveness. Berkeley protesters demand spaces of color, harass white students trying to pass. Now, if we had a legitimate governor, which we do not in California, or legitimate president, in my opinion, they would get up on their bully pulpit and say, under no circumstance are we going to permit this kind of bullying. It is criminal. You will be arrested, and the full force of the law will be thrown at you. But these left-wing thugs who are blocking people who are white, saying they demand safe spaces for LGBT or spaces of color, not letting white kids pass, say, the gate, they're committing a crime. And if we had a legitimate governor, these bums would be arrested. I don't know what the charges are, but they'd be arrested. And if we had a legitimate president, he put a stop to this racial division in America. The protesters at Berkeley are also harassing white students trying to study. Now, you know why they don't want white students to study. Because that's racist. Studying is racist unto itself. I mean, if you take time out from listening to rap music and you go to a library and you take earbuds off and you actually are studying, let's say, chemistry, physics, or something like that, that's racist. That's not a thing. That's how they get ahead. It's white privilege. I mean, studying unto itself is an example of white privilege because I guess their parents taught them to study hard to get somewhere. That's an example of privilege. So when you let people in who never should have been in the college to begin with because they couldn't keep up with anyone else, what they do is tear the whole university down. In a video of the protest, the so-called anti-racism protesters were seen denying passage across the bridge to white students, shouting, go around, while happily allowing students of color to pass through. They then went over to the student's store and they blocked the student's store because they felt the store interfered with their safe spaces. If you think we're living in a sane nation, you are mistaken. It is a nation on the verge of a revolution. And these people on the left don't know what a revolution is like because they've never lived through it. They're bullies. They're unqualified morons. They're used to getting away with it because no one has fought back. But there will be a fight back. I've studied history, and I will tell you, when it comes, they will not know what hit them. If you look at Germany in the 1920s, and I know it's a hard analogy because it's not identical, Germany had been crippled by the Treaty of Versailles, where reparations were imposed upon them for a war of which they were only one part. And yet the whole world ganged up on Germany and said, you started the war, you owe all these other countries reparations. Land was taken away from Germany. There was massive unemployment, massive inflation. And along came Adolf Hitler. Hitler was a demagogue, a racist demagogue at that. Now, of course, we all know what Hitler did, but Hitler was a product of the humiliation that Germany was living through. The people were even willing to accept him, and it wasn't by any great numbers that they accepted him, by the way. He won by the slimmest margin, 31-32%. Most Germans really were quite liberal in their politics, and they were afraid of him. They didn't like him. They didn't like his message, but they wanted somebody to save them from the communist thugs who were beating people up in the streets of Germany, dominating the police, dominating the population, rioting wherever they wanted, intimidating the population. It's an ugly story on both sides, but it has a very bad ending. And what happens when you let communist agitators like this get out of control? Well, what happens is history steps in, and the pendulum swings, which is why I read to you from Teddy and me, Confessions of a Service Human, about little bears and little dogs, because there comes a time that you have to get away from the horrors of the world. And I hope that you understood it and why I took you to that place. Susan on WMAL in line one, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Dr. Savage, for taking my call. And I wanted to say thank you for that beautiful story. It made me choke up a little bit, and I know where you were taking us. I know every day you take us into this journey with you every day, and we're going down the road, and all of a sudden you decide to make a right turn, and you take us with you every day, and I think it's wonderful. And I know that you were trying to calm the rage that we feel with everything you tell us, the truth, and I'm sick and tired of it, too. I'm sick and tired of the election. I'm sick and tired of Obama. I'm sick and tired of being politically correct, transgender bathrooms, Kardashians, and Cher. And if I had a move-in truck company, believe you me, I would make them leave this country.
I understand that. Believe me, I understand it. You caught the whole zeitgeist of my show and my... Look, I'm a man of many moods, and when you reach this point with an audience which has followed me a long time, most of my audience has been with me a very long time, even the new ones become attached to the show, it's like a guy that you get to know and you live with him, a storyteller, a guy who runs a restaurant or a bar, just a friend, really. You'll go with his moods. He'll take you where he's going, and you'll go with him because he's leading the show. He's talking to you. I don't have any predetermined place that I want to take you, but I know this. The rage in this country has never been greater. I've never seen anything like what this man has done to this country. The devil himself could not have done to this country what Obama has gotten away with. Each day the outrages grow. Each day he spits on everybody of a certain demographic. Each day he mocks the people in this country who stand for the traditional values of this nation. Each day he kicks the borders down even further. Each day he decimates the language by destroying it, by inviting rap stars, for example, into the White House who speak 50 words of English, and most of those words are vile pornographic words. And of course he denies that there's even a culture to this nation. And what's ironic about this Obama situation, which I don't think I've ever said, but I have to be very cautious in how I surf the following thought. It's interesting that he identifies with the African-American experience when, in fact, his father was not African-American. His father was African. So where does he come up with this whole idea that he speaks for all African-Americans and tries to marshal them into a rage that was long simmered down? There's a huge black middle class in this nation. If you look back, let me take you back for a minute to the Vietnam War. If you watch footage from the Vietnam War, any of the battles that are being shown now, you see black men and white men fighting side by side against the Viet Cong. You see them carrying each other off a battlefield, bleeding on each other. I'm not saying they loved each other, but they were all together in that battle. And now you look around and there's nothing but hatred and division. Do you think it emerged on its own? You don't understand that social movements are created. They don't just get born. You don't understand that there's great amounts of money and propaganda behind every social movement in every nation. You don't understand that this agitator in the White House is doing this on purpose and that he set us back in race relations over 50 years. He set us back in human relations over 50 years. He set us back in international relations over 50 years. Do you understand what a retrograde this man is? But you wouldn't know it because of the media. When I say the media, I specifically mean Wolf Blitzer, Jake Tapper. You can name them all. They are the arch devils of our time, in my opinion. They are the handmaidens of the deceit. They're the handmaidens of the rage. They're the handmaidens of the violence that we are seeing. It's the media that destroyed this country. And I'll take you back to the Vietnam War again. The Americans were winning battles at great cost to themselves. Men were dying. Men were bleeding. But they were winning the battles. Every battle they fought, virtually every battle, well, virtually, mostly every battle. Even the Tet Offensive was defeated by the Americans. Do you know why we lost the war? because Walter Cronkite, that great liar that Obama referred to just last week in referring to the three great names in media when there were reliable sources, it was Walter Crankenhaus himself who started the propaganda machine against the military. And so after a battle, if an American company had been wiped out, the newspapers, the televisions would run headlines, entire American unit wiped out by Viet Cong. But they wouldn't show you the other side of the story, which was that one unit was wiped out, but then the entire Viet Cong battalion was destroyed, and the Americans were victorious. But they wouldn't show you that. In other words, the media was creating a defeatism, and also tar-brushing our military as being weak and incompetent against this peasant army. And my friends, the same thing is going on today with this battle for the hearts and minds of America. I think I'll take a pause on that thought and take some calls right now. Let's go to KSFO Linda, line 3. Go ahead, please. What's your topic, Linda?
Hi, Dr. Savage. I am a child at heart, and I was captivated and touched by your beautifully written story about the little bears and the little dogs, and I truly appreciated the diversion from the horrific news we're all trying to digest and process, but thank you so much.
Linda, do you have children?
I do. I have a daughter who's 27.
She's too big for me to send you the book to read to her, but maybe you're a child. I'm sending you Teddy and Me for the holidays because I think you'll enjoy reading it in bed one night with pajamas and maybe a little dog next to you. I wouldn't recommend the shotgun unless you yourself desire to have a loaded shotgun with you in the bed as well. So stay on the line, Linda. We'll send that out to you. It's a great picture. It's the one the publisher didn't want in the book. I said you have to feature it. But it's odd that the designer put it next to the little bear story. In fact, the funny part about that picture, when Vincent took the picture of us, well, if you look at the picture, if you have the book, go to page 59. So there I am in my striped pajamas reading a newspaper. And the loaded shotgun, as I say, is on my lap, across the lap. It was staged, of course. And there's Teddy staring at the shotgun, as if he knows it's something really dangerous. Like, hey, Dad, what is that thing? Like, what is that thing in the bed? It looks pretty dangerous to me. It's something odd, Dad. What's that doing in the bed? And yet it's a bedtime story about some bears and the lost tribe of bears. So that's it. That's what I wanted to do right now. I don't know what I'll do. There's other things that we can talk about. We can talk about all the other wonderful things going on in America, in Obama's America. How about the Berkeley protesters demanding spaces of color, harassing white students trying to pass? Or harassing white students who are studying because it's not a safe space for them. How do you feel about that? I know how I feel about it. I know exactly how I feel about it, but there's no point in my telling you what I feel about it because we have an absentee governor and an absentee president. And here are some of the signs. Safe spaces of color. And there they are, all the idiots who never belonged in college to begin with. All let in by affirmative action, can't keep up. So they come up with this nonsense about spaces of color. Instead of studying to prove that they belong there, can make something of themselves, here's another group of morons. Hashtag fight for queer and trans spaces of color. Hashtag fight for spaces of color. Another group of idiots. Students over profit. You hear these morons? This is what happens when a university opens its doors to incompetent idiots who never belonged there to begin with. This was once one of the greatest universities in the world. It's very, very dear to me because I graduated from University of California, Berkeley, with a PhD in 1978. And believe me, it was the hardest thing I ever did in my whole life. I've done many things in my life. I've achieved quite a few things. But earning that PhD was the hardest thing I ever did in my life. This was not just stamped out and given to me. It was the most difficult thing I ever did in my whole life. The standards were beyond belief. And I'll remind you, I completed my doctorate in 2 years and 7 months. I had two children. I was working a job or two. And I still got my degree in less than 3 years. There are still people who are waiting to take the PhD exam 30 years later. So don't think that these things are easy to get. But when I see this great university overrun by these invaders who never belonged there because they were not admitted because of their brains, they were not admitted because they could show that they had the brains to keep up with the other students. They were admitted strictly on the basis of affirmative action. And my friends, as I said before and I'll say again, the last I went over to the Berkeley campus, which was quite a long time ago because I can't stand going there anymore, when I see the refuse walking around. Instead of studying, all they're doing is rioting and harassing other people. It was largely Asian kids who had got in there because they all had almost straight A averages. And then there was a complaint, by the way, from the students of color that the university was too Asian. Did you know that? Now, even though you would say Asian people are students of color, I guess they weren't of the right color. And they got in because of their qualifications, meaning their SAT scores and their ability to earn straight A's in high school and do other things. But those days are long gone. And what's going on at the University of California right now is what happened in the City University of New York. I graduated from Queens College in 1963, long time ago. It was a tough school. As I said to you before, it was based on the 100 great books of the University of Chicago. That was the curriculum. And for poor kids who couldn't go to so-called out-of-town schools, it was a great education. It was sort of the Harvard of the working class. But I had to really work at it. I had to take languages, two languages to pass. To get a bachelor's degree in those days, I needed to qualify in two languages. Would you believe that? And take examinations in the two languages. Would you believe that? And then something happened. Along came the 60s, all of the rubbish about racism and this and that. They opened the doors with no admissions requirements, and Queens College fell into disrepair. It became a nothing but extended high school. And that's what's going on now in America because of the President of the United States of America, in my opinion.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Yeah, that's where I want to be. N'importe où dehors du monde. Let's go to some callers. I got 1 minute. We're talking about the revolution that's being fomented in this nation by the sneak in the White House, as exemplified every day and in every way with the violence of various minority communities against the majority community. Dustin on KBET, fire away, say it like it is.
Hey, Savage, I got to tell you, I grew up in South Africa. I immigrated here legally. I became a citizen of this great nation. And the exact thing that happened in South Africa after Mandela became elected was the intentional racial separation and division in order to create chaos. And that's exactly what Obama is attempting to do with his revolution. I saw it in South Africa. I can tell you the exact same thing is going to start happening now. And all that's going to happen is that the greater everybody wants things to be equal and the greater everything wants things to be righteous in their own opinion, the more they're going to want, and no one is going to walk away from this unscathed.
I know that, Dustin. Would you please stay on the line, because I'm going to talk in hour three about a comparison and a contrast between America and South Africa. There are very similar themes.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
What's going on in America right now has gone on in other nations before. There's nothing new under the sun. We have in the White House is a mini Mao. Some would call him a mini something else, but this is a family show. And we look today and we see that left-wing Berkeley protesters are demanding spaces of color. And they're blocking white students from crossing onto the campus under the guise of fight for queer and trans spaces of color. Students over profit. So these are children who never belonged on the campus to begin with. Most of them have absolutely no qualifications whatsoever to be on a campus with students who've achieved almost straight A averages and very high SAT scores. But because of the revolutionary undercurrents of this nation, there was a thing called affirmative action that was introduced in order to bring in people who didn't belong there to begin with. Now, I have nothing against anyone of any color, any race, any creed, any sex, whatever. I believe in quality. And without quality, there can be no equality. I've said that a long time ago. So here are these idiots blocking white kids in the name of safe spaces for transgendered people, as well as spaces of color, which they already have, by the way. Now they've reached the point, they got their safe spaces for the transgendered crowd. They got their spaces of color, meaning, what do you call that? Segregation. They wanted segregation all over again. They wanted the reverse of the civil rights movement, so they were given segregation. They already have it, but now they want more spaces of color. So their idea of a space of color is to block students who are trying to walk freely on the campus who are white, then to harass white students trying to study, because that's racism. In other words, if you study, it proves you're a racist. Now they go and block traffic on the streets. The so-called anti-racism protesters don't let whites pass, say, the gate. Then they move to the front of the campus, and they block the front of the student's store because they say the store interfered with their safe spaces. And then they put a vacate notice on the, like they have some power, these idiots, these sub-morons. You are hereby notified by the students of the University of California to vacate the premises immediately. And they go on, university administration wrongly allocated this two-story facility to third-party corporations, keeping in line with its intensifying legacy of prioritizing financial profit over student needs. Now, they don't ask themselves some basic questions like, why would a campus let idiots like them on it? Number one. And number two, who pays for it? And number three, what will happen if actually any of these things were followed through? So what is behind all of this attack upon our civilization? Well, I've written about it for so many years now. I've talked about it in Government Zero, and of course I point out what's coming in Scorched Earth if Hillary wins. But we had a caller in the last hour who led to an interesting line of thought. His name is Dustin. He came from South Africa. He saw similar themes under the war criminal Nelson Mandela. Dustin on line two, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, Savage. You know, I was sitting there and I was driving in my truck and I started to listen to what you were saying about all of these things that are occurring, and it really dawned on me. You know, I moved here legally. I worked my butt off to get here. Became a naturalized citizen. And I look around, and there really is no sense of being grateful for what one has in this country anymore. And when I hear about things like Berkeley...
Oh, but let's go down to the reality of South Africa. Nelson Mandela comes along. What happens next?
Everybody promotes freedom. Everybody gets the vote. The votes turn out the way that they want. And then things never change.
Okay, but what happens to the white minority in South Africa that had wound up on top? What happened to them?
They dropped to the bottom of the list.
Now, what do you mean by dropped to the bottom of the list? Were the people who were not white able to do the same jobs just as well? Because I read that South Africa had ceased to be a net exporter of food. You know, let's go north of South Africa for a minute to ex-Rhodesia, now called Zimbabwe. After the revolution in Zimbabwe, there were terrible things that happened. There was a scream for the localization of and the acquisition of all the farms taken away from the white people in Rhodesia. They said they stole our land, they turned them into farms, we're going to take over. Well, Rhodesia, meaning known as Zimbabwe, which was once a net food exporter to the world, became a basket case. They couldn't even grow enough food to feed themselves and had to go out into the world and beg for food. Is that what's going on in South Africa now, or is it any different?
I believe it's headed that direction. I was born in Zimbabwe, and it's heartbreaking to see that happen there, too. But when I say the white man dropped to the bottom of the list, it became a matter of, regardless of whether you were educated enough to have a job or to be a part of something, you were last in line to receive that. Even though your qualifications may have said you are more qualified to do this.
All right, so that's what affirmative action is doing here in the United States of America. So I want to talk about the comparisons and the contrast between South Africa and here, because I believe many people fear that what happened in South Africa, all the way through to the fact that it's now the rape capital of the world. Are you aware of that?
Absolutely.
You know that that's one of the hidden statistics that you never hear reported in the media? South Africa is now the rape capital of the world. It is never reported in the Western press for obvious reasons. And even more embarrassing is the fact that it's the child rape capital of the world. Is that a fact in your opinion, or am I making that up?
That is an absolute fact in my opinion.
Okay. And not only my opinion, but the facts speak for themselves. South Africa, after the revolution, after the anti-white rhetoric, after the overthrowing of the white dominance in South Africa, it is now the rape capital of the world and the child rape capital of the world. If I'm lying, prove me wrong. Now let's go on to America. How do we compare and contrast with South Africa? I don't have as dire a projection as you may think about things going in that direction here for a couple of reasons. Number one, the black Africans did have their land appropriated by the colonists. And what they were saying is, we want our land back. There is no comparison between that and the LGBT riots here in America, for example. Because so far as I know, George Washington was not part of the LGBT crowd. I mean, if you wanted to see a revolutionary riot here in America, I guess you could say the Native Americans could be demanding something, but they're not. So why is it the LGBT people are joining with the African American people and the other malcontents on the campuses? And who is doing this? The answer is the hardcore radical left, Marxists, Stalinists, Maoists are using these people as the fools that they are to try and bring about a social revolution. And by the way, should this revolution ever occur, which it will not occur, these idiots will wind up on the bottom anyway, because they're not qualified to do anything except be useful idiots. So in other words, what I'm saying to you is, the righteous indignation that these people project is all false. Their land was not stolen from them. What's the basis of their complaints about? What do you mean? LGBT safe spaces. They already have that. So what do they want now? They're just bullying white kids. They're just bullies. They're thugs. And the police should crack down and arrest them all. That's all. If we had a governor, he would send in the National Guard and take them out by the hair and throw them into a prison and teach them what real freedom is all about. Then we'd have peace in America. If we didn't have a left-wing agitator in the White House, this wouldn't be going on. He would use his bully pulpit instead of glorifying hateful rape lyrics of Usher the other night in the White House. He'd be telling these radicals, cut it out or you're going to jail. But he likes this kind of thing, because a man like him can only get where he is by dividing and conquering. So look, I've studied this in great detail. We're not going to go by the way of South Africa. There's a few other things that you haven't talked about. Tell the people about guns before and after Nelson Mandela, will you please?
Before guns, everybody could have guns. After guns, they had to be registered. They had to be filed into a central database. All gun information had to be stored. All gun sales had to be reported. So you are in a database should you own a firearm. And it has become increasingly more difficult to get a firearm because you have to be able to prove that you are somehow in danger of some crime happening to you. Now, statistically, we are all in danger of a crime happening to us, so it should be a no-brainer.
Okay, so let's now look at South Africa per se. In the white communities that remain, do they live behind gates or do they live without gates?
They live behind gates, barbed wire, 24-hour armed security, on call.
Mm-hmm. Is that the vision that you see for America coming soon?
I think that in the next 30 years, if we continue to have people in power who are attempting to revolutionize the left side of this country, we will be headed into a very dark area and a very dark time in which no one will feel safe unless you are the one doing the bullying, as you said earlier. So,
okay, let's pause at that. Now, I could summarize what you've just said in two words, scorched earth. Restoring the country after Obama. If she wins, that's the road she will take us down. If he wins, we have an opportunity to turn this dear ship of ours around before it goes down with everything else that is in it. So let me send you a copy, Dustin, of Scorched Earth. I'm still able to publish, write, and broadcast in the United States of America. So what do you think about this? It's interesting that yesterday's program wasn't... I have to find the sheet of paper if I can. It's very hard for me to find it about the death of our Western civilization and... I did a great show yesterday, in my humble opinion. Here. Nope, can't find it. And I tried to show you what's going on in the attacks upon Western civilization, where it's coming from, where it's going, what we need to do to stop it from happening, and I can't find it. But yesterday, I would say, you know, we all rank our own shows. I would say yesterday's show was one of my better ones of many years. But today, following it up, is a little different. So if you care to join the conversation, the phone number is 855-400-SAVAGE. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
Now to what's going on one campus in America. You've got LGBT, whatever, demanding spaces for them. Students of color want safe space. They already have the safe spaces. First, they wanted segregation. So now they've moved to the point of blocking white kids from walking on the campus through, say, the gate. And they're moving into the libraries and disrupting students who are studying, saying that their studying is somehow a violation of their whatever. I don't know what it's a violation of. Now, the universities themselves are at fault for allowing this to happen. They have only one function, and that's to give an education to the students who attend. And the reason they do nothing is that they're all cowards. If we had a governor who cared about law and order other than feathering the nest of his donors and taking care of the unions, he would call out the National Guard and he'd arrest these bums, arrest them for trespassing, and throw them out of school. Then you would have safety for all people on the campuses. And no refunds, by the way. That's what I would do if I were governor of the state of California. I wouldn't be building trains to nowhere. And this is a symptom of so many things that are going on in the country right now. I'd like to take a caller, but unfortunately I hit the wrong button and I lost my call screener, but my two assistants here don't even know what happened. I guess they're busy doing something else. In a video of the protest, the so-called anti-racism protesters were seen denying passage across the bridge at Sather Gate to white students. They screamed at white students, "Go around!" while happily allowing so-called students of color to pass through. Now, what you know what this is, don't you? This is the kind of left-wing agitation that Obama just savors, because division leads to conquest. Division leads to conquest. John on KVOR in Colorado, line one. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, good day, my friend. I hope you're well. You and I have a common. One of those, we both went to Cal. I was there in 71, 72, getting a grad degree in engineering, 13 months with honors. I was in and out of the area within about 15 months. But I still attend to enormous pride in that school. Several things that need to be mentioned. The president of Cal is none other than Janet Napolitano.
Oh, right. I forgot that. They took that freak and put her in there to ruin the University of California.
Yeah. And you and I darned well know that what took place the other day, if it had been a reverse role situation whereupon you had white students creating an impediment or a rampart against those of color, et cetera, the news would be all over that. They'd have
Janet Napolitano was an all-time criminal. She should be thrown out of her job. She was put there by who? Who made her the Chancellor of the University of California? Do you know?
Ultimately, it comes down to the ex officio regent, who happens to be the governor.
Mm-hmm. So why is California permitting this racism against white students? Why does Jerry Brown not talk about it? Why does Jerry Brown not step in? I mean, it's not the whites have disappeared in California, have we? Have all the white people gone somewhere in California? We pay most of the taxes. Shouldn't Jerry Brown protect us as well?
I think in no small part, my friend, it has to do with a larger order whereupon you have individuals throughout this country in universities, whether they're public or private, and they're all essentially, you possibly would agree to this, they're essentially Mao's little disciples with their little red books, and it's part of a plan. I ask the pregnant question many times of individuals, where is the U.S. Capitol in the United States? The stock and trade answer is Washington, D.C. I go, oh no, the U.S. Capitol for the United States is the United Nations over there on First Avenue between 42nd and 47th. And I'm not trying to deify Donald Trump, but I get his pain and my pain whereupon he wants to try to return some semblance of the United States Capitol back to Washington where it belongs. You get all these students for the years and years and years they're in school being essentially brainwashed
But these are not students. These were people who were put in based upon affirmative action policies. They never, ever met the qualifications to be put into this great university. They never had the averages, for example, of an average Asian student. We all know that. And they were put in there strictly to make it look like it was racially balanced. And because they cannot keep up with the other students who got in based upon hard work and brains, they are now disrupting the entire university, saying it's about racism or sexism. Now, they are not smart enough to do this on their own. Behind them are the people like Tom Hayden, who died yesterday, the Jane Fonda types. They are behind this. If you look carefully, it's the white communist professors on tenure. Stay in the line. I'm sending you scorched earth right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Here are the real stories of the day, and they're so tragic I didn't want to read them, because the news is worse by the second. In New York City, a principal at a lower Manhattan high school for special youths in the Manhattan Early College School for Advertising, which is inside the Murray Bergtraum High School, a principal spotted 18-year-old Louis Penzo with his headphones blasting in the hallway. So the principal, Matthew Tossman, asked the youth, Penzo, to turn down the music. And Penzo, the youth, refused. So then the principal, Mr. Tossman, who's a real principal, tried to remove the headphones from the 18-year-old student. Hey, I'm a student. I'm an 18-year-old student. Of course, in my day, the 18-year-old student would have been in prison by now. But because of the idiot liberal judges and educators in New York City, the moron is still in high school. The moron turns around and cold cocks the principal. And then when the principal is on the ground, he beats him up on the floor, beating him several times in the face, causing swelling and lacerations around both of the principal's eyes. The principal, Mr. Tossman, was taken to Lower Manhattan Hospital for treatment. Now, the rest of the story should say the youth was kept in jail and charged for his attempted murder, but no. I'm waiting for Mr. de Blasio to hire him as head of human resources and say he's an oppressed minority who was picked on by an evil non-minority principal. But that story hasn't come out yet. Instead, we see that Penzo was arrested and charged with second-degree assault. And he is currently awaiting arraignment at Manhattan Criminal Court as of last night. Now, of course, they'll shop it to some liberal psycho judge on marijuana who will say he's an oppressed youth who needs another chance and let the kid back to beat someone else up. Oh, by the way, before we go from this story, Mr. Penzo, the youth, lives in Bedford-Stuyvesant, a once great neighborhood which has turned into a cesspool. Penzo was involved in a separate Donnybrook now, and using an Irish term. I would change it from Donnybrook to something else, but it's a family show. Mr. Penzo, who lives in Bedford-Stuyvesant, was involved in another brutal brawl just last month when Penzo crashed his car into another vehicle in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and then repeatedly punched the other driver. But he wasn't arrested. The reason he wasn't arrested is because the police in New York are under strict orders to not ever arrest the minority unless that minority should assault a member of Mayor de Blasio's city council. And then he will be taken in as a possible employee. Anyway, he was charged with assault and harassment for that incident, but released immediately to go on to what he does best. Here's another little story for you to show the beauties and wonders of multiculturalism that's been sold to you by the vermin in the liberal movement, the upscale, affluent vermin who hate Trump. Here's the headline. Migrants' rape sentence overturned if the court can't prove victim said no. So you know, on the face of it, you say, migrant. Well, that's, of course, a cover word now, migrant for Muslim. You understand that. A migrant who was jailed after raping a young boy at a swimming pool has had his sentence overturned, as the court couldn't prove that he knew the child said no. The incident occurred when the vile attacker, identified as 20-year-old Amir A., visited Theresienbad Pool in Vienna, Austria. See, he is allowed in the pool, the Muslim, because it was part of the integration process of Angela Merkel, the war criminal. So the Iraqi Muslim, who worked as a taxi driver after coming into Austria via the Balkans, was also given a 15-year-old helper and translator by Angela Merkel, the war criminal. So the Muslim from Iraq who was led into Germany because the men have been deballed by the radical feminists who have destroyed Germany, brutally sexually assaulted a 10-year-old boy in the pool's changing room. In other words, he raped a 10-year-old boy. And then he went for a little swim. When he was caught, he said it was a sexual emergency because he hadn't had sex for 4 months. Now, right there, you see, that's the failure of the German government for not providing him with little boys upon arrival. In addition to sandwiches, warm clothing, an iPhone, even housing the Germans don't have, they should be given little boys because that's part of their culture. He called it a sexual emergency. So after the little boy who had been raped alerted a lifeguard, police arrested the Iraqi Muslim at the scene, and the boy was taken to hospital with severe internal injuries. Do you know what that means? Do I have to spell it out for you what this animal did to this child? Up to me. I'm the judge. I would castrate him and hang him from a telephone pole. But no, that's not what the judge did. Are you ready for the rest of the story? The attacker was later found guilty of serious sexual assault and rape of a minor, and he received a sentence of 6 years in jail. But wait. Here's the rest of the story. The German Supreme Court lifted the verdict after accepting the defense vermin lawyer's claim that the lower court had not done enough to ascertain whether or not the rapist had realized the schoolboy was saying no. I'm not making this up. This is what has happened to once great Germany as a result of the infection, the mental infection of liberalism. Supreme Court President Thomas Philip said that while the verdict was watertight with regard to the serious sexual abuse of a child, the written verdict on the second indictment, rape, cannot be sufficiently proved. And so the 20-year-old Muslim rapist of the little boy is now free to go. And the next legal step will take place in 2017. This is a cautionary tale for all of you upper-scale liberals who think that being nice to everyone is the way to make them nice to you. As they say from where I come from, it's nice to be a liberal until you're mugged by someone, and then you might change your mind. But it's actually said in more vernacular terms, which I cannot repeat on this family show. You know, if I had to give you one example of what's at stake in the coming election, it couldn't be a better story than the one I just read you. Because if this psychopath, Hillary Clinton, who is unfit to be anything except a prisoner, if this psychopath wins, she will destroy this country. Not for 4 years, not for 8 years, but forever. She will destroy the country from within through the courts. If you think I am mistaken, just study your history, and you will see that liberalism is, in fact, a true mental disorder. Now, the other day, we saw that the Russian naval battle group was moving through the English Channel, and Doofus, the schmuck who runs the country, the criminal schmuck who runs the nation, who had a rap group in the White House, further diminishing and debasing the United States of America, gets away with anything. Russia's naval battle group moves to Syria, demonstrating power projection capability. So while the doofus in the White House was having a rap party with the lowest elements of the planet, and doing nothing about anything in the world except laughing at everybody and mocking his domestic enemies, going on stupid shows like Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel is like Jonas Schimmel. In fact, Jonas Schimmel on the Lower East Side had better knishes than Jimmy has brains. So you have a president who's so low that he goes on Jonas Kimmel's show and talks about tweeting while Russia moves a naval fleet to their base in Syria. The ship can carry more than 50 aircraft, 15 Su-33 all-weather air superiority jets, MiG-29s, multiple fighters, 10 Ka-27s, Ka-31 helicopters, the entire northern fleet, joined by the Baltic fleet ships, is on the way to the Mediterranean. It is amazing. 7 other ships as part of the battle group, including the nuclear battle cruiser. This is very serious business. And they're joining 10 other Russian vessels already off Syria. And the fact of the matter is, Obama knows this. And he has threatened to do something about it. Instead, the doofus had a party with a bunch of low-life rap stars in the White House and then went on Jonas Schimmel's television show the other night. So Trump sneezes, it's covered by 15,000 news outlets that second. Obama waffles, can't do anything right, and he's held up as a role model for the world. That's the twisted universe in which Donald Trump is running. Trump sneezes, and his droplets hit a woman on the back of a plane 20 years ago, and Charlie Rose can't stop talking about it. The droplets hit a woman on the back of a plane, and people are bailing out of going to his hotels. All of the refined people in New York, Chicago, San Francisco, all of the refined, affluent people who are just stunned that he is such an evil man. Just pure evil. Oh, how dare he grope a woman? Now, this is an astounding story. Trump brand loses luster with affluent, according to the Associated Pukes at AP. And they quote an event planner named Beth Bernstein. I can just imagine how pure Beth Bernstein must be in a private life. But nevertheless, Beth Bernstein decided that after his hot mic boasts about groping women came to light, old Beth Bernstein, as pure as the driven snow, I am sure, removed wedding photos that she had thrown at a Trump hotel in Chicago from her website. She wrote to hotel staff to remove her from the list of preferred vendors and posted a call to arms on her blog. She says, "I simply cannot bring myself to walk in that door there any longer," wrote the owner of an event company. Now, she's not alone. We learned that rates for rooms at Trump's new D.C. hotel are being slashed as travelers weigh their options. And smartphone data suggests fewer people are visiting his properties compared to rival venues nearby. So they're saying that the Trump brand is really in trouble right now. But it's not amongst the average person. It's amongst the, quote, well-heeled. Now, I don't know that anyone who's not well-heeled has low heels or ripped heels. I think all of us have good heels these days. The age of the idea of well-heeled versus bad heels is way, way over. I mean, who goes to a shoe store to have a shoe repaired these days? But put aside the Manalo issue. The issue is his brand being tarnished? Some say yes. Now, they're quoting people like this one or another one, a marketing professor at NYU. A marketing professor at NYU stands alone amongst itself because anyone who's a clever man in marketing wouldn't be teaching at NYU. He wouldn't be teaching marketing. There used to be a saying in the teaching profession, those who can do, those who can't teach. So we won't really talk about the marketing professor at NYU who says right now his brand's catered to the affluent who are disproportionately turned off by his activities. Now, that's a laugh unto itself because the alleged activities are commonplace amongst the affluent. I mean, they have no values. They have no morals. They don't go to church. So why would they be turned off so much? Now, on the other hand, the people who are not affluent, I guess the others down there, are not turned off by the mogul. And his brand is not being tarnished. But apparently, the poorer people don't stay in Trump hotels anyway. That's all. Now, I don't know whether to say this is good news or not, but Jane Fonda's ex-husband, the traitor Tom Hayden, finally died. Tom Hayden, 1960s anti-war activist, dies at 76. Now, of course, the AP glorified him as a great man. But he wasn't a great man. He was a piece of garbage, in my opinion. He was a member of the SDS, which is a communist organization. In 1960, while a student at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, one of the worst places on the planet, he was involved in the formation of Students for a Democratic Society, and it's the opposite of a democratic society. They were hardcore Marxists even then. Thus, they said they were for desegregating the South, and he wrote the Port Huron Statement, very famous amongst old line, dirty hippies all over America. But the SDS was equivalent of the STD of today. The SDS was the political equivalent of STDs. But nevertheless, the student movement was glorified by the vermin in the American media, and he has finally gone on to his reward. And let us hope that there is actually a hell and a heaven. Here's another little story for you. Sweden bans Christmas lights under the guise of security. But it's that there ain't no Sweden anymore. Kiss Sweden goodbye. Because of the liberal fools who run Sweden, they're not lighting up Christmas lights because it may offend who? Muslims. Muslims. It used to be when in Rome, do as the Romans do. But it's now when in Rome, do as the Muslims do. And if you think it can't happen here, just remember who's running the country. His name is Barry Hussein Obama. Make no mistake about it. Soon the Christmas lights will go out in America. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or swissamerica.com. Well, It's finally up on Amazon Kindle, Michael Savage, The Survivor. I've been working on this for a long time. I don't have any time to talk about it right now. I'll talk about it tomorrow. I'll read from this early unfinished novel, an outline by myself. It was written between 1983 and 1988, but it's important today because this novel, The Survivor, that I wrote, is an anti-nuclear story from me, the conservative writer and talker. And what it does, it tells the story. It tells the story of how two families try to survive after a limited nuclear exchange between the United States and Russia. Kind of timely, isn't it? It's filled with all of the details that I'm known for. And the story will take the reader on both a sea passage to Mexico aboard a sailboat that was outfitted in advance of the nuclear exchange to survive such a thing, and into the South Pacific where the families try to start a new life on a mind trip to a world we all fear and for which few are prepared. I have one review so far. The writing is superb. The themes are terrifically complex. If nothing less, you're putting this out as part of the collected writings. It offers insight into you in a way that students of Savage would enjoy immensely. It is fascinating for me to read it, knowing this was where your head was at in the late 80s. So much of your current voice is in there, but it is also very different as well. It's like seeing an early work of Picasso that is reviewed by Ian Kleinert, who is my agent at Objective Entertainment. And again, what I'm talking about is an unpublished novel, which is now available for just a few bucks, $5.99 on Kindle. I'm bypassing publishers now with my unpublished works. You say, sure, because no one wants it. Well, no, I'm a best-selling author. Believe me, I could get it published if I wanted it. But I want to offer a very inexpensive version of some of my unpublished work. And The Survivor is really the first in this series. The one that I did last week was Banned in Britain, but that book had been published in hardcover. This book has never been seen before. It was a manuscript laying in an archive somewhere, and the more I looked at it, and the more I watched what was going on in the world between Obama's America and Putin's Russia with the threats of nuclear war, I realized that these themes are relevant all over again today. And God forbid it should happen. Are you prepared? Would you know what to do? Would you make a run for a distant island with yourself and your family? Some people are thinking about that. What if there was a limited nuclear exchange between the U.S. and Russia? What would actually happen? Which targets would they pick? Which targets would our military pick? Well, I did some great research at the time, and I include all of it in The Survivor. Again, it's on Kindle. It's a download. It's an interesting read. See what you think of it. Until tomorrow, this is the Savage Nation signing off from another great day of broadcasting. Be well.